Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. Standing by to join me on the second half of the show is Lori Gold with her book, her seventh book, Kiss, Marry, Kill. Lori's book, which is out through HarperCollins, brings the conversation game, played now famously even by Taylor Swift's fiance, to life, asking which would you choose, kiss, marry, or kill? The book's premise takes a question that haunts many of us. What if? And Lori Gold delivers a page-turning novel that explores the path not taken, the push-pull between ambition and morality, and the powerful and complicated world, female friendships, all core issues ripe for discussion that audiences are really relating to. She is joining us now. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Congratulations on your seventh book.
Thank you. It sounds crazy when you say that, but yes, it's been a publishing journey since 2015.
Amazing. Well, not amazing. Looked at your backstory of work, and it makes total sense to me.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're so welcome. So what was the original spark for this book, Kiss, Marry, Kill?
So this actually came when I was watching a television show. This was a number of years ago in early 2020, and I was watching a teen TV drama, and the kids in high school were playing this game of Kiss, Marry, Kill, which I had known about, but there was something about them playing it and watching that it just hit me, this is a great hook for a novel, and how has no one done this yet? I was on deadline for some other books, so it kind of like was germinating in the back of my brain for a little bit. And as I thought about it, I like to push story ideas into what we call high concept in the writing world. Mm-hmm. So high concept ideas are things that are easily explained, easily grasped, kind of well-known, big ideas.
Okay.
And so I said, well, if I'm going to do something based on the game, I want to shake it up. So that's where the idea of spinning the rules came from. So the way the women played in the book is instead of having one person choose, say, from three celebrities of who would I kiss, marry, and kill, I have three people, and they each have to make a choice out of the people present at their summer outing. One woman chooses someone to kiss, one to marry, and one to kill. And then, of course, because I keep wanting to push it into this high concept realm, I added the twist that they make their choice and they wake up in an alternate universe, having each done the thing that they said.
Of course you did. I was thinking about AI and metaverse, and I just love how that's all intertwined.
Yeah, yeah.
So decision fatigue and the just tell me economy, let's talk about that. Was that a big part of your initial idea for this book?
You know, I think it was, because once I hit on what the premise would be, I started thinking about who these women would be. And the idea of choice inherently makes sense to be somehow related to the theme of the novel. They make a choice and they have to live out the consequences. But as I started thinking about how I wanted that to play out in these characters, I thought about how I was feeling at the time when I was really writing this and digging into it. And I was very much feeling like the character of Aubrey in the book, who is very stymied by choice, and mm-hmm. she can't make decisions because she's so terrified of making the wrong one. And that was kind of at the place where I was in my life. So as I started to think about, you know, how we all make choices and the weight we put on our choices for like the perfect job or the perfect partner, or mm-hmm. the perfect couch or throw pillow, and we think that's going to make everything okay.
Right.
And I do think we all get a little overwhelmed by the amount of choices that are out there, and this just tell me economy that's starting to develop of, you know, you sit on a couch and you click on the TV and Netflix tells you, you know, you like this, so maybe you'll like that. And mm-hmm. it's kind of taking away our choice in a way.
Yes.
And so exploring all of that was definitely became the backbone of the novel.
Yeah. It's really impacting our critical thinking.
Absolutely. You know, I think we, especially now in this age of AI, where we, you know, you can not only, the internet used to be that you could go on and find the answer to something. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like it's, you can even find the questions to ask.
Right.
We're so much relying on technology to, you know, do the smallest things for us. And, you know, I think as someone who didn't grow up with that, I find that to be uncomfortable. And so in writing about it, it allows me to explore those feelings.
I love that. So I want to dive into the process of writing this book. Is it similar to your other books? Tell me about that.
It's similar in the way I approached it. I always try to come up with the idea, the premise, as I described for this one. Mm-hmm. And then I really dig into the characters, and it's a lot of character work. And I am a big plotter, so I do outline the novel from start to finish before I begin writing. And all of that has been the same since my first book that published in 2015, and was the same for this one. But this one was different in the revision process for me. I usually can write a draft pretty quickly in under 4 or 5 months. And revisions take all sorts of different lengths of time. But this one, I wrote and revised over probably 2.5 years. Not straight. I was working on other projects in between. But it's a complex storytelling narrative, and I needed the time and the distance from it to be able to return to it and say, how can I strengthen it? How can I streamline it? And I had to put it aside 4, 5, 6 months at a time, and then I would go back to it. So this one has been around for quite some time.
Yeah. And do you sometimes struggle with, did I make the right choice as you're writing?
As I'm writing, I feel like I am on a really good path for what I want to do because I spend so much time thinking about the story. What I think happens, rather than struggling, did I make the right choice? It's actually more in a positive way of I've been in this story world for so long. It's almost like my brain works in the background and it's making connections between seeds that I planted, and yes, it actually becomes kind of more and more cohesive as the writing goes on. And that actually more confirms some of the choices I've made.
I love that.
I think writing might be the one place in my life where I feel like the most confident.
Yeah. Well, Lori, it sounds like you put up this structure, like you have this blueprint, this framework, and then you start adding to it. And you already know, you've mapped, like you said, you spend so much time planning and mapping.
Yes, absolutely. And that came from the progression of writing. When I first transitioned to do creative writing, I had been a journalist before and was working in the kind of tech editing and tech journal field. So I was familiar with writing, but creative writing is entirely different. And when I started to transition into it, I realized I really didn't know what I was doing. That was 3 years in a book that has not been published and won't be published, that at one point made it up to 800 pages for just an adult contemporary,
whoa,
you know, women's fiction novel. Yes, definitely, whoa. It's not a Game of Thrones, you know.
Right.
It shouldn't have been that long. But it showed that I didn't really have enough of the tools to be able to create a story. And I took some classes and I started learning, and one of those classes really just transformed me to emphasize how much stronger your novels can be, and frankly, a more enjoyable process if you put in that thinking time. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that really transformed me. And I truly think if I had not transitioned, I don't know if I would have stuck with it, because it was difficult to kind of grasp the concepts and how to do it. So I'm forever grateful to that class.
And the title is so provocative. When you came up with this title, was there a deeper meaning as well?
You know, I think the title, just playing off of the game that people know, and there are multiple ways to describe this game, and there's a non-clean version, and we definitely went with a clean version.
Yeah.
But I think the instant recognizability of it as the game was what I wanted. I wanted people to read the title and say, oh, is that the game that I played in mm-hmm. high school and college and, yeah, you know, with friends on vacation? And I wanted to make it recognizable without veiling it in, you know, something else. Because it really is the essence of the game. And, you know, all along I thought in my head it would make for a really cool cover, which I do think they did. I think HarperCollins did an excellent job with the cover design. And I think it's very eye-catching. And, you know, there's so many books on shelves that standing out from them in a way that grabs a reader's attention is more important than ever.
I love that. So I didn't ask you this earlier, but could you give listeners a brief synopsis without giving too much away?
Sure, yes. So Kiss, Marry, Kill follows three women who are best friends and co-founders of a health and wellness app that's about to go public on Wall Street and is very highly valued. And these women are at their summer outing, and there are some tensions surrounding going public. And to kind of release tension a little bit, they play a round of this game, Kiss, Marry, Kill. And they do spin the rules the same way I discussed that I decided to do when I was forming the premise of it. So one person has to choose who to kiss, one to marry, who to kill. And they wake up in this alternate universe having lived out the choice that they made. So one wakes up in bed next to a younger man, one wakes up married to someone who is not her husband, and one wakes up next to a dead body.
Right. And we'll leave it at that. Yes. Wow. So tell me what people are saying about this book.
What I love people are saying about it are things that that are exactly how I wanted people to feel. There was one review that called it delightfully wacky. And I love that because that's, sure, that's what I'm going for. And a premise, yeah, like this is what you want. But the other piece that people seem to really be appreciating, you know, in the time that it's been out in the week or so, is the relationships between the three women. And that is rewarding for me. You know, somebody said it feels like real conversations you'd have with friends over a glass of wine. That, you know, life is messy, but so are these women, but that's the point. Mm-hmm. Kind of phrases like that are very much what I hope people will take away from this. Creating a book that had deep female friendship at its core was by design. There's a lot of entertainment that focuses on families and, you know, relationships with partners or spouses, and those are important things in our life, but I think the focus on that often makes the best friends in books the sidekicks, and I didn't want that. I wanted them to be front and center stage in this book so that the characters and that the friendship are resonating with people was really important to me, and I'm really pleased to see that that's happening.
Mm-hmm. I learned about the multiverse actually during the pandemic. Why do you think there's so much fascination with this, with alternate realities? Is it because people are obsessed with what-if stories?
I think so. I mean, who hasn't, you know, had the what-if haunt them? You know, mm-hmm, if I had just done this, and is the grass truly greener?
Yes.
And I actually think, you know, especially since the pandemic, there has been a lot of books and TV shows and movies that have had this multiverse or parallel life or, you know, even time loop kind of things, because it makes us revisit pivotal moments in our life and pivotal decisions, and it makes us think about those in our own life. And the pandemic was full of people making so many big life changes and decisions. And I think coming out the other side of that, some of us are still kind of thinking about those, maybe haunted by them, or maybe pleased that they were able to make different choices in their life, went to in a different direction that they wouldn't have expected pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, especially now in these years, since we are very much living the consequences of a very strange time for the world.
Yes.
And reflecting on how we got to where we are is something I think we're all doing. I think it's a natural piece of human nature, at least for a lot of us, to visit, even in a, you know, it doesn't always have to be in a negative way, in a positive way. You know, some people, yeah, say, wow, if I hadn't, you know, gone on that train, I would have never bumped into this person and this great thing would have never happened. I think we're trying to make sense or have some control over things that, you know, often are uncontrollable and are coincidence or are random. But I think as human beings, we try to put that control on something.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the relationship people have with their phones and less connection in real life with humans?
You know, it's something that is disappointing to me, and even disappointing in myself. You know, the times where you just feel like a little bored and you grab that phone and mm-hmm. you say, wow, what am I doing? How have I been programmed for this? And I do think it has such a negative impact on our relationships. But I think the positive side of that is I see, at least in the book community, I see a real gravitation towards people, not enough, they're so much putting their phone down, but seeking that in-person community.
Yes.
Book events are being more and more well attended. There are these reader retreats where people get together, usually women, for a weekend or sometimes for a day long, you know, day treat, and they just silently read together. And if that doesn't speak to how much we want community and kind of maybe putting the phones and the screens a little bit to the back seat, you know, I don't know what does. So I find, yeah, those things quite quite encouraging and gives me some hope that maybe we're going to find a better balance than
I love
we have
that
right now.
Yes. People are craving in-person connection. I'm seeing that. Have you heard of the Offline Club?
No, I have not.
Okay, so the Offline Club, I saw there was a group, there is a group in Paris, in Belgium, they're all over, they're just sprouting up everywhere. And basically, you leave your phones locked up at the front of the event, and you're not allowed to have a phone. And people read, they have conversations, they might knit, they might play games, they chat, they nap, everything, but be on their phone. And more people are reaching out to these events because they want those in-person experiences that they've lost because of phone addiction.
Oh, I'm so encouraged to hear that. I love that. And you know, it's like, I don't want to talk about this in a way that I'm perfect, because I'm certainly not. I, you know, as I said, I gravitate towards my phone a lot, but mm-hmm. I think it's almost something that feeds on itself, right? If you yes. have an event where you can go to where it's understood that everybody puts that aside and does something else, it has a ripple effect. Yeah. And so I think that's a really great thing. I love that. I'm going to look at that.
Yes. I'm actually a community partner with a field study program here at UC Irvine. And we would do activities in the past where I'd provide paint and canvas bags, and they would paint the bags, or we'd do nostalgic games. And it was beyond, obviously, as you know, Laura, it's beyond the idea of the painting. It's to get people talking again. It's to get them comfortable and to breathe and take a pause in whatever they're going through. And I feel like at all ages, we need that more than ever.
Absolutely. You know, similar to what you're describing, you know, a friend of mine had a New Year's Day brunch, and she had set up little stations all around the house of like a little, you know, paint by number station, a little vision board station, a little, you know, face mask station.
I love it.
And all those ladies just got to like sit in a room together and kind of do very relaxing activities. And we just talked to one another. And it was really such a great idea.
So special.
I'm a big proponent of things that help us kind of connect with each other again.
You bet. Well, the previous Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, used to say he felt that our social isolation and loneliness could be solved by, or addressed at least, by having potlucks. And I love that.
Yeah, I love that too. You know, there are all these studies that talk about how friendship, you know, and loneliness can be the worst thing for people as they age. Mm-hmm. We just see more and more studies confirming that. So yeah. That's, you know, potlucks seem like a great solution.
Do you feel that your book is a lot about relationships or identity, or people seeing different versions of themselves?
I think it's definitely about people thinking about their lives and trying to find the things that have maybe not gone the way they wanted, mm-hmm. and coming out the other side to say, well, that happened, and how do I move forward? I have a line in the book that says, it's only hindsight that lets us know if a choice is right or wrong. And, you know, I really have come to feel that over writing the book. And I think that's what the book is about, and that's what these women are coming around to by the end of the story. You know, looking at their lives, some are too hard on the choices they've made, some aren't hard enough. And the women in the book represent each side of that. And ultimately, they have to come to a place at the end to say, you know, instead of the what if that haunts us, you know, the what now, you know, mm-hmm. moving forward.
This is great. And congratulations. I know Zibby Owens chose your book, Romantic Friction, as the summer read pick and NPR Book of the Day as well. That's amazing. And where in Boston do you live? I lived in Brookline.
Oh, yes. I am on the South Shore, so I'm on the coast. I used to be in Cambridge for many, many years, and
okay.
the Kiss, Marry, Kill is set in both Cambridge and Boston, reflecting my many years of living there. And then one of my pandemic choices was to flee to the beach and to the coastline, which is, you know, kind of one of my great loves.
Beautiful.
So that's where I am now.
I love that. And you also teach creative writing classes. You're a book coach and writing retreats. So these things people can find out more about?
Yes. So the best place to find out more about all of that is my Instagram, which is under Lori Goldstein Books, or my website, which is the same, LoriGoldsteinBooks.com.
How much time do you have between books? Like, do you have a good year, or do you already have your next idea, Lori?
Really, my career has kind of gone in waves. I've 7 books. I've had basically 2 books back to back years, and then a pause for a couple of years, and then 2 books back to back years, and then a pause for a couple of years. These two books, Romantic Friction, which came out last May, and Kiss, Marry, Kill, which came out this April, came out, you know, about 11, 10 and a half months apart. So that was a very intense cycle, finishing edits on one, revising the other one, you know, kind of going through the marketing of one and then kind of gearing up for the second one. So that was a very busy time, but I still try to prioritize my writing. And so I have another book that's nearly complete that I'll be finishing in the next couple of months and then, you know, be moving to the publisher side of things.
Fantastic.
And it's a good cycle. I like being busy, but it can be hard to be your most creative self when you have so many things going on. So
that
it's nice
true.
To have a little bit of a pause, and I'll spend some time revising this and then, you know, get it out into the world.
I do have a question to ask you because I'm a writer as well. I find that sometimes when I'm struggling with the thing I'm supposed to work on, a great idea pops up. And I kind of think, don't go there. Just jot it down, you know. But does that happen to you sometimes?
It really does. I mean, I think it's natural, you know, if you're a creative person or you're thinking of story, you know, you find story all around you. Like I said, this one was inspired by, you know, a TV show that I watched. Mm-hmm. Stories, just the ideas, I feel like, for me at least, come so frequently, and yeah. You can't write them all. There's just not enough time. So I have, you know, notebooks, and I have files on my computer that anytime a story idea comes to me that kind of grips me, I write it up. And sometimes I will find that I will pause and I'll actually do some plotting for some of these stories. So I have probably three stories that are loosely plotted that I have not written yet, and I might not write them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it allows me to express that creativity, that this idea grasped me, whether it's a character or a premise or a theme I want to explore. And even just the process of writing it down, writing a short outline for it, allows me to feel some sort of completion, even if it never gets written as a full novel. So
yeah.
I do feel that pull to other story ideas, but there's usually the one I pursue is the one that, you know, is a mix of I'm very, very passionate about,
yes.
but also feel like we'll find a place in the marketplace because, you know, as an author who is making this my career, you know, at the end of the day, a publisher has to buy the book and readers have to want to read it as well. So it's a mix yeah. of business and, you know, creativity as I decide which books to really pursue.
Great. And one last question for anybody listening, because my show is called Get the Funk Out. If somebody is in a funk right now trying to write and they just feel like they, you know, they're just kind of stuck, do you have any advice?
I feel like this is going to sound so cliche, but I truly believe it. I think you need to take a break. And I don't mean a break for, you know, months.
Right.
I mean, you need to get out away from that computer.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go for a walk. You need to, you know, if you bike or swim or whatever exercise you do.
Yes.
Even just take in the shower or fold in the laundry. Your brain works behind the scenes, as I was saying earlier for myself. And once you take that pressure off of that blinking cursor in front of you and you just go and you ruminate on the story a little bit, you can get past that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we don't, as writers, or even the public viewing writing, writing is as much thinking time as it is typing words on the page.
Yes.
And giving ourselves that brainstorming time and that time for our brains to churn on what we're working on, I think we don't appreciate enough and do enough. And I think every time I'm stuck, I walk out the door and I take a walk, even a 5-minute walk, and I just, in my head, run over the thing that I'm stuck on.
Yes.
And often it does come to you, or the start of a solution comes to you.
No, I love that advice. And I had somebody give me that advice years ago. I think it was a Friday. We were wrapping up an interview and he said, you know what, if you're stuck on something, Janine, I want you to take the weekend off. Don't get on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, the whole weekend?
Mm-hmm.
Really? And I did, and I listened. And then being more present in the world and getting out of my cave, you know, I went out in the world and I did other things and I felt more relaxed. And by Monday, I had the answer to what I was struggling with.
Yes, I think that, you know, that I'm so glad to hear that. But I think sometimes when you push too hard, it's mm-hmm. almost like you resist even more.
Oh, yes.
So kind of giving yourself that break allows you to come back to it, you know, with a fresh feeling, fresh eyes, or just having, like I said, it worked in your subconscious somehow, and you were able to dive in once you had that break.
Fantastic. Well, Laura,
our brains need it. Our brains need downtime.
We do. We have to unplug our brains and recharge, right?
Exactly, yes.
Well, Lori, we have to wrap up, but I want to thank you so much for calling in. Congratulations on your 7th book, Kiss, Marry, Kill. It is up on the show blog, everyone. getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. If you missed any part of this conversation, it will be up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap. Congratulations, Lori. Thank you so much.
Thank you again. I appreciate it.
And I look forward to our next conversation with your next project.
Thank you. Me too.
All right. Be well. Thank you. That was Lori Gold. Again, if you missed any part of my conversation, she's the author of Romantic Friction, by the way, if her name sounds familiar, as well as other works. And you can read more about her by visiting the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. That's a wrap for me. Up next, SoCal New Weaver with Pass Forward. If you want to find out about being a guest, you can just send me an email to Janine, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, @kuci.org. I'll see you back next week. Have a good one.